Most of the preaching I grew up on was not that kind of preaching. The preaching of my youth had me hanging over hell like a weenie. And I don't know what the Christian church folks do to scare y'all into heaven, but Baptists just let you sit around dry mouth for about a month, you know. Because you know he's going to split a cloud any minute and you might get left. And they just bam it over the head, boy. Bam, bam, bam. And we get clobbered for everything from smoking, drinking, dancing, and wanting to, all the way down to whether or not we got perfect attendance and can out sword drill somebody. You know what the sword drills are? It's when you call out Exodus 4:7 and the first one to find it's the best Christian, you know? It's interesting to me that most bigots quote Scripture. You can memorize the Bible and still hate your neighbor. Somehow we have gotten the idea in our heads that if you will keep rules and belong to the right institutions and clobber everybody that didn't like you, God has got to grin. And I think he must have Excedrin headache number one. I want to tell you a story about the prodigal son. I've never talked about the prodigal son because I have my favorite preacher in the world with 152 sermons on the prodigal son. And I figured if he hadn't found it, why hunt for it? But I have a basic principle in my life, and that is I will not share something with you that hadn't changed mine. I hear a lot of people perform truth. I'd rather share it. Last August, this story hit me like it had never hit me because I saw something in the story of the prodigal I had never seen before, and it just absolutely wiped me out. I was a bug on the windshield of life. Just, I couldn't believe it. I kept thinking to myself, I could have sworn that was just a big headlight. Pow! Well, you know the story of the prodigal son. I don't really have to tell it to you, but I really do. It's what I call going barefooted in the Bible. But when you start thinking about the prodigal son, it's the classic story of the guy who's 16 years old, got his first camel license, you know. And he can conquer it all. He is ready for it. He knows the rule. His dad has worked hard. He can take part of the inheritance over hill, over dale. Let them all turn pale. Here I come, baby, ready or not, you know. Went to talk to his father one day, and he said, Dad, I'm 16. I got my own camel and my own camel license. In fact, they say it's one of the highest grades ever given in camel tests around here. It's a strong camel. He's a hump and a half. He can really move. I love this dude. We make a good team. I've been getting restless around this farm because I do not enjoy fig picking. I've never enjoyed fig picking. I tried to be a fig picker for you, Father, but I hate fig picking, and I hate sheep shearing, and I hate wheat whacking. I cannot stand it. The farm is not my thing. You have got the spirit of an artist chained to a stump. I got to go, Dad. I got to go. And he said, Son, you're just 16 years old and feeling every bit of it. Well, the argument goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Finally, the father, in an effort to try to be sensitive to his son, realizing that according to the Jewish ritual and law, the boy's old enough to be on his own, but wow, you hate to see it happen so early, especially when he's manifested more stupid than he has smart in his time. When you're long on stupid and short on smart, it just doesn't do to head out yet. But some people will never get longer on smart. So you turn them loose and hope they'll grow. And so he comes down for breakfast one morning. No prodigal is just so excited because he thinks he's got his dad backed in the corner. And sure enough, there was a little pile of the precious whatnots that had been handed down from the family to the family. And there was a check for his half of the inheritance and a deed to his part of the farm for him to sign over to his older brother. And older was out on the back porch going, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, getting that little weirdo out of here. You know, he was so excited, which is maybe the reason he wanted to go. I wouldn't want to live around with a dumb brother like that. Well, you know the story. The kid just gets all fired up. Woo-ha, throws his backpack on his camel. Hits that dude and blum, 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 down the main lane away from the head house, takes a hard right, burns down the trail, tops another hill. There's this great big lighted outdoor billboard that says, "Far Country, nearer than you think." It's amazing how fast your fortune attracts friends and how quick it goes when they get there. And the kid hits Far Country, lighted up like a Christmas tree on the 24th. And they come to him like gnats come to a candle. Boy, and they hooped and they hollered and they partied and they carried on. And as most of us are aware, whether we want to admit it or not, you can generally buy more friends than you can earn. And what some of us wouldn't give to be noticed. Glenn Campbell said it in The Rhinestone Cowboy. There'll be a lot of compromising on the road to my horizon, because I'm going to be where the lights are shining on me like a rhinestone cowboy. Woo-ha! Hadn't we all wanted to be there? Sure. Hadn't we all wanted to be famous and popular and important? Certainly. Hadn't we all wanted to be voted most likely to do almost anything from succeeding on up? Sure. And what the prodigal discovers is, your friends will run out as soon as your shekels do. And lo, in the behold, it doesn't take long until, destitute of funds and friends, he finds himself hunting work. What's your experience? Well, I ride camel pretty good, you know. Sorry we don't deliver mail on camels. You know, I don't know that we could use you here. Place to place he goes, keeps getting turned down like a bedspread at night. You know, they just cannot handle this dude. And finally, takes the only job he could turn up, and this has got to be the most humiliating job he could have found. And I think Jesus added this in the parable just for emphasis. He winds up feeding hogs in the far country. Now, you think about that. Jews weren't allowed to eat pork. And they were taught that that's the filthiest animal this side of a groundhog. You know. In fact, Jews would just go around those pig pens and go, whew, you know, just, hey, let me out of here. You know what it's like when you get near the baboon cage at the zoo on a still day? It's that kind of hang with you kind of odor, you know. It just, the odor's out marching around. Up, two, three, four, yeah. Man, it'll knock you down and stand. Got them over here. Come here, odors. You know, go away, go away, go away. They'll strangle you, man. You don't breathe through your nose at all. First thing, he's not permitted to eat pork. He's been taught that this is a horrible animal. Why God thought up hogs? Why Noah didn't just leave them out there to drown? Sure would have saved a lot of problems, and I wish he'd also left chiggers and mosquitoes. Maybe they could swim. I don't know. But anyhow, God could have sure solved a lot of problems if he just killed chiggers and mosquitoes, I think. But anyhow, where was I? Oh, yeah. He's been taught that the hogs are horrible, okay? Second thing, he's got to feed those dudes. He's got to wait on them. He's got to minister to a hog's needs. Good morning, O thou hog. I just brought thee cobs, you know. Blessed art thou among swine. You know, just be nice to a hog when you hate them so. It's got to be an ultimate indignity. First thing, you've been taught they're terrible. Now you got to wait on them. But the third and most horrible part of the whole sequence, he filled his belly with the swine's husk that they did eat. How do you think? I didn't make that up. It's in the Bible. I can. But you imagine fighting a hog for lunch. Come get some of those out of there, you know. Give me that cob. Wow, 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 right? They're terrible animals. You got to wait on them, but you got to eat out of the same trough. It wouldn't take me long to come to myself either. He came to himself. Big deal. Darn right. You know you're not going to ask for a transfer because it's just more pigs in another spot, right? What experience have you had feeding hogs? Good, right over there. No. Trying to get out of that, you know. So he gets over the fence and he stands there. And do you remember he practiced the speech? Think I'll go home and ask my dad for work. I've already given up sonship. Now I'll go ask for a job. Father, I've sinned against heaven, against thee, and I'm not worthy to be called. I've sinned nothing against thee. Boy, he practices it. It's smooth. It's slick. It's just like speech for selling encyclopedias door to door. He knows that, babe. And finally decides that the only thing to do is head home and ask for work. Don't need to be in the top bedroom anymore. Out the bunkhouse is fine. Treat me like one of the fellas. I got what I deserved. Got my half and blew it. And so he starts home. Father, I've sinned against heaven, against heaven. No more worthy to be called. Just put me up in the bunkhouse. And there he comes down the road. And he begins to smell the green, green grass of home. Oh. Farming wasn't so bad, really. Beautiful figs. Oh, I love figs. Well, you've been fighting a hog for a cob. Figs look awful good. And man, he fig picks for the best of them, pluck. You know, he's having a great time. Oh man, the sheep look good. Older has had a bumper crop this year. And he comes to the big gate. Loving father and sons. Pulls his rags up and dusts them off. Sucks in his gut and starts down the main lane back toward the head house. That's got to be sort of a humiliating moment for a guy that thought he could make it and crashed and burned. But here he comes. About 300 yards from the house, he spots a figure on the porch. And it is his father. Where you would find him every day about this time, out on the porch, with binoculars. Checking the road from the far country, because he'd been praying he'd see that kid rag flap back down the trail. He knew he'd be in rags, because he was a wise old dude. And he spots him. Thinner. A little older. Oh, gosh, it's just somebody looking for work. Depression does that. They're coming in here from everywhere. But the way he walks, and by golly, it was. Down the man, here he comes. Boy, it's one of the great moments in the Bible. They start hugging and back slapping and carrying on, and the kid's trying to get it out, and his dad's strangling. He's wimped off. I'm sending his. Would you just hush, prodigal man? You're so good to have you. Pound, pound, pound. But Father, wait just a minute. What? Just hold it. I'm no more worthy to be called your son. Shut up, son. You know, just let me look at you. Oh, I'm a mess. I'm so filthy. Yeah, but you look... Do I smell hogs? It wasn't near as much fun as I thought, Dad. Man, did I ever blow it. That only job I could... I don't care. Hogs and all. I'm so glad you're home. I got a band on standby. Got a fat calf that ain't going to be too excited about this. But we are going to have one more everlasting party. And they do, man. They pull out every stop on the organ and put the pedal on the floor and let it happen. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Man, and they're serving hot cups or whatever Jews drink at that time of the year. And it is one more ever-loving hoot. Prodigal's sort of bashful about it all. Kind of like Gomer, having done something right for a change, you know. Just, golly. Well, just nervous and... One of the servants going by with a tray full of cups says, I believe he's out in the backyard, sir, talking to a horse. He says, what? I just call him like I see him, sir, talking to a horse. Oh, he snapped, you know. So he goes to the back door and pushes it, and sure enough, there's Older talking to a horse over by the corral fence. Goes out and blows everything he's got. Ruins our good name running around with those raunchy women. And comes back in here. And what do? They blow a party for him. Never had a party for me. I worked my knuckles off out here with these sheep and figs, plowed and worked. And the horse is going. Now, when you ticked off, you want to talk to anybody that'll agree with you, right? And loving father appears and taps him on the shoulder. Older, just get your hands off me. That kid comes back in here and you start giving him everything again. I've worked for my half of this. I got the deed that says it's mine. But son, he was dead. As good as lost. And he's home. And I'm excited. And I still love him. And I hate him. I've always hated him. And without getting into personality. And without trying to determine whether loving father blew it or did it well at other points. In spite of the fact that he welcomed old prodigal back with open arms, he might have been too partial to him. Maybe he just saw in this restless kid something that he remembered of his own youth when he had to get out and learn the hard way. Maybe he admired old Older's tough stick to it, plow every rose straight, get every fig tree in season, out of season, get them. Maybe he just so loved that and appreciated it that he took it for granted. And I'm sure if he's as sensitive to the older brother as he was to the prodigal, he straightened out some of that and had a few parties for the older guy, too. I don't know. But it suddenly hit me with father and older yelling at each other in front of an amazed horse. He's just too startled to go, you know. It suddenly hit me for the very first time in my whole life. What would have happened if prodigal had turned through the gate down the main lane toward the head house, 300 yards from the house, had run into the older brother first? I grew up in the loving father, in the older brother Memorial Baptist Church, hanging over hell, like a weenie. It was baptistic. We even had a plan of salvation that proved that it was the proper technique, but it wasn't biblical. It was not even Christian. When you start sharing faith, you don't start with how ragged and filthy and goofed up the prodigal is. You start with how much the Father loves him like he is. And if you miss that, you have missed the capital good, capital news. God loves you where you are, like you are, and the best picture of evangelism I know is standing with one foot on the bottom rung of a hog pen and your elbows up on the top rung, leaning over, telling a kid with his nose buried in slop that his father's on the porch with binoculars. Instead of saying, clean yourself up or your father will never speak to you again. Not one person in the New Testament ever got to ask Jesus for forgiveness. Not one. He always announced it. He always cut a piece of cake and said, happy birthday. Welcome to the party. I love you. And we start with the Baptist National Anthem, one door and only one, and yet the sides are two. We're on the inside. And some of you might have sung that in some of your churches, if not in your denomination. It's very easy for us to be so proud, like the standing up prayer in the temple, that we are not like other men are. Only to unwrap the treasure and discover the surprise that we are all very much alike, loved by the Father with all of his incredible heart. Try to share that with your brother. Try to share that with your prodigal. Try to share that in the mirror. You matter. You matter very much. And don't you forget it. In fact, you better believe it. And I'm so grateful that God is more like Albert Young, pow, than anybody I know. Aren't we all? God bless you.